and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 6th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night, not too late, but not early, is Jim Allen. How you doing?
Oh, it is early. It's not midnight yet. And it is Saturday night, which is kind of rare for us, because normally when John says it's Saturday night, it's actually Sunday morning. And I'm just saying that to confuse you all. It's like we're already
because
confused.
It's almost so midnight.
We're confused. I'm speaking for John. I'm confused. So I want you all to be in the same boat with me.
Speaking for me as opposed to speaking over me. Yes.
Yeah. Never happened.
Never happened. If you find that guy, arrest him. It wasn't me. That's your line. Huh? That's your story. And somebody better stick to it.
Yeah, well, I hope so, because I'm good.
Okay. All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with former Bay Stars and infielder Bobby Rose. We're going to look at MPB's marriage to the number 143, talk about the latest MPB coronavirus infection patient, and we're going to field some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Okay. Well, I had a long overdue appointment over the internet with Bobby Rose, and it was great. We'd been talking about doing this interview since we both joined LinkedIn about 4 years ago. And it was always a case of, how can I say this? We do most of our old player interviews in the off season, which is why you're hearing a zillion of them this year. And it's like, it happened just at the end, at the beginning of spring training. He was just going into minor league spring training, and I can't do it. Okay. And so I'll try to catch up this time or that time or the other time. And, you know, things got put on the back burner, and ironically, you know, we had all the time in the world this year. So now I'm trying to clear up my backlog, and I don't mean to say Bobby's on a backlog. He was like one of the first people I wanted to talk to.
And right.
Now, I met Bobby for the first time in 1999, I think it was, when I was working for the Daily Yomiuri, and I was at Jingu Stadium, and the Bay Stars players were coming. I don't remember if they were coming off the practice field to the bus, or they were coming off the bus to the practice field, and the across the street practice facility, the indoor.
Well, I mean, it is 30 plus years ago. You don't really have to remember, dude. Don't strain yourself.
It's 20 years ago, dude.
Oh, that's right.
1999. Not 1899. Okay. Anyway, so I saw him, and I said, "Hi, I'm Jim Allen." And he says, "Oh, I'm glad to finally meet you." And for someone, you know, who had spent most of his writing career sitting on a tatami mat typing onto a used Macintosh propped up on a small dresser in my two-room apartment, it was a heck of a surprise. But the long story short is my coworker at the time, before he was my coworker, was giving Bobby Rose copies of Jim Allen's Guide to Japanese Baseball. So we were familiar with each other's work. Anyway, excellent. It was a huge boost to my ego that somebody knew who I was. And anyway, so it was sort of, we never did an interview. Our colleague, later John's colleague as well, basically filled our paper with Bobby Rose interviews. And so there was no need for me to do one. And so the time finally came this past week, and I called him at his home in South Carolina. And now the only thing I need to say is he's going to talk about the Yokohama Bay Stars infield in circa 1998. And he talked about three players. They are Takuro Ishii, Tatsuya Shindo, and Norihiro Komada, all of whom are around baseball. I don't know exactly what Shindo's doing now. He was the Bay Stars head coach the first year Alex Ramirez was managing there. Komada's an analyst. You see him at the ball games a lot. And Ishii is now a batting coach with the Giants after being a batting coach with the Carp and the Swallows. Much to the consternation of our buddy Warren Cromartie.
Thinking Michael Westbay, but yeah, go ahead.
No, it's kind of a his feeling is, well, the Swallows were really bad last year, and so why would the Giants sign the batting coach for the worst team in the Central League? And, you know, but, you know, I don't know about that. I think it's a much longer story than that.
I think it's deeper than that.
And the fact that he also tends to move around a lot. I think he's fairly opinionated.
Fairly, he says.
Okay. Somewhat. Anyway, so that's the infield he talks about. Okay, well, let's hear what Mr. Rose has to say. Okay. Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is former Yokohama Bay Stars slugger and second baseman Bobby Rose. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, it's been a long time, and now you're in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and is your family, is everyone's good from the coronavirus, I hope?
Yes, we're all staying safe and, you know, just hanging out and being together.
Oh, that's
a little barbecue and everybody safe.
How's the weather?
It's actually pretty nice. I mean, it's about 70 and it's getting a little bit warmer. Sun's coming out, really nice.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, we're just getting into springtime here, kind of a just about when it's supposed to be opening day, but we're about a month away in Japan.
So, yeah, that's true right now.
So how are all the baseball people doing? I mean, when there's no baseball in America, is it weird?
Yeah, it's kind of strange because normally everybody's in, you know, spring training or getting ready to start their season. So I mean, obviously being at home and not being down there, mm-hmm. you know, really disrupts their routine that they're normally used to.
Yeah, that's, we were chatting before about routines, and you, one of the things you said about being in Japan was that it's kind of a 10-month grind, as we know, because, you know, spring training starts on February 1st, and you don't get to leave until the end of, almost the end of November. Sometimes middle of October. So that's a long go, but you've got the opposite this year. You've got indefinite home time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you just, you know, really don't know what to do with yourself. So you just try to figure out things around the house that you need to get done, get those things done. And your wife might have that honey-do list that she's been hanging on to for about 10 years. And I've been getting into.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So how good are you at that?
You can definitely find something to do.
How good are you at getting those things done?
Not very good.
Okay.
Because, well, I normally push them off to the next season, to the next season, to the next offseason.
So. I know about that one. having said that, we've been trying to have this interview now for about 4 years. So certainly I'm also quite accomplished at that. So let's talk a little bit about your time with the Bay Stars. You started with them when you were 25 and you won a championship, and you were one of the most valuable players sort of year in and year out in the Central League. But you said something interesting about we were talking about the 1998 season when the Bay Stars won their championship, and you said you were the weak link in that infield. And can you explain that?
Well, when I got over there, you know, I was a second baseman, and obviously when I played in the big leagues, I was a second baseman. I hadn't played second base I've only played second base for a couple of years, so it wasn't really my primary position. So, you know, going over there, it was still a position I was still learning.
Okay.
And then, you know, seeing the other infielders over there, Ishii, Shindo, and, you know, Kamada.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's you got to step it up a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, I just had to take my ground balls, and just, you know, work my butt off, because I did not want to be that guy that let down that infield.
Wow. And I, of course, I think of Ishii. He always amazes me. He's one of the guys I really love, and because he was a pitcher in high school. In fact, he was a pitcher as a pro.
Yeah.
And then they converted him to an infielder when he was about 23, after he even won a game as a pitcher.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, I mean, he's magical at shortstop. I mean, he can play shortstop, third, but he can play anywhere in the field, just like Shindo. I mean, Shindo's the same way. I mean, those two are, you know, really blessed at what they can do on the field.
Obviously, one of the things that people tell me, I remember when Trey Hillman was here managing the Nippon Ham Fighters, one of the things when he went back to the States that he wanted to bring back was more infield practice before the games. Mm-hmm. And is there value to that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can work on a lot of things during that time, and, you know, see what you can do, you know, just to push yourself, mm-hmm. see if you can make a play during those times, because those are times you can really, you know, stretch it out just to see, because nothing's on the line, right?
Okay.
So now, you know, then in game time, you know, it happens. You're like, yeah, I can make this because I've done it.
Okay.
You know? I mean, it's something that I've practiced. And then there's those plays that just happen magically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you can't really just, I mean, it just happened, you know, there you're going to the head first in the stand.
Okay.
Does that.
So what was your primary position before that? Third base?
Third base. Oh. I was kind of the shortstop.
Okay.
I moved me to third base. And then right before I got called up to the big leagues, mm-hmm. they put me at second base. And I was like, oh, my gosh, what are you kidding?
Wow.
So
that was like, how much longer? I didn't check Baseball Reference, but how many games had you played at second base in Edmonton?
I played before. I mean, I went to the big leagues from Double A. So,
oh, okay.
I maybe had maybe one day.
Wow.
But when I got to the big leagues, they had me at third base, second base, first base. So positions I, you know, obviously I've played, but you're in the big leagues, you're going to say I can play anywhere.
Absolutely. Okay. So then the other thing is, you when you came to the Bay Stars, and I want to talk about that team a little bit, because actually they're having a resurgence now, and I know they've got a lot more fans back in the last 5 years. They've had a foreign manager, Alex Ramirez, and the style's different, and the excitement's really there. But the excitement was there when you were playing there. They had a great fan base, and the fans came out. I remember in 1998, and when Hiroshi Gondo was the manager, and that was a very young team. And you know, you said before it wasn't magical, and I said it was magical because in retrospect, in my memory, in my old man's memory, you know, they won in 1960 and they won in 1998, and it's, you know, and then that's 21 years ago. So it's a long time again, but it was a young team. I mean, that was a really young team, young pitchers, young infielders, young outfielders. You fit right in there.
That's, I mean, we all worked, we all came up in our careers together very young. And that's why I said that, you know, we could have won a couple more championships for sure. You know, if we were, you know, stay together and, you know, continue to work with the discipline that we had, you know.
Well, let me ask a couple of questions I usually save for the current players, but who is the funniest guy on that team?
on the
Bay Stars. Well, no, not Stars. That year specifically, but what from your time with the Bay
Stars. Saiki was pretty funny. Saiki's, you know,
oh yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of a clown.
I loved him. He was having trouble getting playing time when he was those years. He kind of came into his own about right after the time you were leaving.
Right, that's right. I mean, he's a good player. I liked him. He was kind of a funny kid, though.
Yeah. He had gave me one of the. I asked him, "Do you have any sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Do you feel angry or resentful about being kept in the minors so long? Because that used to be kind of a Bay Stars thing." And he said, "No, it made me a better person."
Yeah,
and that's all. But that actually, I found out that's kind of the pat answer for minor leaguers in Japan. And there's only a few. I've had a few guys who tend, actually, oddly enough, who are not always the most socially
easy to get along with people who get really angry about how they were treated in the minors. Most of the really nice guys just, you know, they give you a good answer. They give you a positive. They have something positive to say about a really bad situation. It's amazing. Okay, so what were some of the things that helped you adjust to playing baseball in Japan?
That's a good question. I guess, you know, like I said, with, you know, my family.
Okay.
Getting adjusted over there, like I said earlier, you know, helped me, you know, maintain focus on the game of baseball. As far as the game itself, to you know, I went about my business the way I needed to go about my business, my routine, so I made sure that I was ready. You know, I didn't want to let anything else get in the way of me getting myself ready, knowing what I need to do to get myself ready. I didn't want any other distraction. And I made sure that that happened, you know, so.
Well, you had to... you had the situation where you essentially became available to the Bay Stars because of the Angels bus accident. And right. So you obviously you had this whole situation in your career that was out beyond your control that had a huge influence on it. Sort of like the coronavirus. I mean, it was just something that happened to you. Was there any sort of feeling on your part that I'm not going to let anything I can control sabotage my time?
Well, I mean, baseball, the game of baseball is so unpredictable.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what you're going to do as a player when you get on that field and the emotions that you're going to feel, whether you have good days, bad days. And, you know, for me, fortunately, I had a lot of good days, which, you know, really, you know, kept the bad days from creeping in on me. So, and you know, some people can have really bad days that just overwhelm them.
Sure.
And they just, you know, don't know how to control it. But for me, I just wanted to make sure that I kept my routines every day, and I wanted to make sure I didn't have no distractions from me getting myself together and making sure I had to do what I had to do. So when the game started, I was prepared.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of distractions in Japan. I mean, I don't know. There's, you know, as you said, baseball's difficult, and that's what everybody reminds me when we talk about how easy it is to fail if you're not there. But there are so many I don't want to say there are distractions in Japan, because there are distractions everywhere, because life can be distracting, but there are different distractions in Japan, and they're distractions because they are different. You know, there's the coach telling you stuff that you don't want to hear, and that's in perhaps in your mindset is completely irrelevant, and your kid's sick, and does the doctor understand what they're saying, and all these things that are happening in Japan. So how do you shut that stuff out? And the crowds are different. Everything's different, you know.
Yeah. There's no shutting it out. It's just those are the things that you live with. Like everybody lives with those. I mean, whether you're a baseball player or not. I mean, whatever you do in life, you still live with those type of issues in your life.
Sure.
Because you can still go to work and your wife's at home and she's got all these issues or whatever, and you know, you still have those stresses and worries in your head too. So I mean, we all have that. Everybody deals with those things differently. So for me, it was just like I said, you know, my wife was the backbone, and she still is, and she carried us through, and she still does. And it's just, you know, if you don't have that support, then I would say it's going to be kind of difficult.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. So one of the things mostly I hear this from pitchers, but sometimes in your case, as I said, because of the bus crash, your situation was a little different from a lot of the guys who are coming to Japan. A lot of the guys are here because they're not getting any opportunities in the majors. And they come here and they learn something. Now, and it could be a baseball thing they learn, like a pitch, or a way to, you know, an approach at the plate to foul off pitches so they can get one there. They can hit like a lot of the Japanese guys do. Or it can be a physical thing like Fernando Segundal with the Buffaloes. He failed with the Blue Wave. He failed with the Blue Wave, but he picked up a way of thinking about physical training here that he took back with him to the States and became a AAA monster and came back to Japan and had a restarted his career. Was there anything you picked up in Japan that you changed, that changed you a little bit as a player or made you the player you could be?
Well, like I said before, you know, the way you are as a hitter, your hitting philosophy changes for sure. If it doesn't, then like your success isn't going to be there. You're gonna fail.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, quite a bit. I mean, but if you don't, like I say, you don't change that mindset,
right,
then it's gonna be terrible for you, because as hitters, I mean, for hitters, where do we live? We live in failure every day.
Sure.
Our that's our life. It's how you deal with that failure determines how, you know, what your day's going to be like, what your week's going to be like, how you're going to deal with your next at bat, your next 10 at bats. I mean, you just got to keep going with the grind, because mm-hmm. you know you're going to fail.
Right.
And what are you going to do about it? Nothing. Mm-hmm. You're just going to keep going. You're going to keep taking your batting practice and keep working hard. I mean, that's just baseball.
Okay. That's really interesting. And I think let me ask, because that helped you. Has that trained you in life to deal with these things and sort of put things in perspective?
Well, absolutely, but in real life you don't have the luxury of failing, you know, 7 out of 10 times to keeping your job. So
well, that's not... that depends on the job. I speaking right. for a writer.
That's but I would say, yeah, absolutely, because you're dealing with those things every day, and you know, it's. I mean, for a baseball player and someone who goes to work 9 to 5 every day, it's a little different, because you know we're on display in front of 50,000 people every
sure.
day, and then you know the next day we got to read about our failures.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or we read about, you know, us hitting a home run, but how often do you read about you hitting a home run?
Well, you did
not very often.
Well, you did more than most, but that's another.
My point being is that you're failing so much more.
Yeah,
and that's being seen a lot more than the successes. You know what I mean? But that's what makes the successes more memorable. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. because when they happen in, you know, big moments.
Sure, that's actually what I was gonna ask. Mm-hmm. Is what is that lead to the other? Okay, excellent. Okay. Now tell us a little bit, because our listeners would want to know what, now you left in 2000, you left the Bay Stars. Was it after the 2000 season?
Yeah, it was after the 2000 season.
And what was your mindset at that time? Was it, because of course here in the news, in the Japanese papers, everything's about money,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Well, I mean, when I was negotiating, the negotiations didn't go well,
okay.
obviously, but for what had happened with the negotiations and all that, and you know, like I said, with me being burnt out with the game and
mm-hmm.
you know, the grind, and it was just time for me.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, looking back, and like I said before,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, not the wisest thing I should have done.
Okay. 2001, 2002, you were out of baseball completely, or were you looking at other things?
No, I was completely out.
Okay. And then what made you think, okay, after 2 years out of baseball, spring training is going to be fun?
Let me tell you, I wasn't thinking at all. I was living in Colorado in the high altitude, and I wasn't getting no oxygen to my brain.
Because, I mean, I know there's a long history of guys who, for one reason or another, walked away from the game. And Jackie Jensen with the Red Sox left because he hated flying, and when the major leagues expanded, it was hard for him to the flying killed him. So he tried to come back after a year, and it was just, it's too hard.
It is.
It's
the
like
game's too fast. It's just too fast and your body slows down and you just can't keep up.
Okay. Well, we appreciated your keeping up all the time you were with the Bay Stars. You left the fans of Japan with a lot of good memories.
Well, it was awesome playing there, I'll tell you. I mean, the fans were great. You know, I was hoping to come back there this year, but unfortunately, the virus has prevented that for now.
For now. Yeah. Things are going to be back and different, but perhaps better as well. I mean, I can only hope so.
Absolutely. That would be great.
Okay, so are you now... Just the final catch up here is, so what are you doing now? Are you still coaching?
No, I was at Go By the Orioles this past off season.
Okay.
And, I wasn't picked up for the next year, so I'm just hanging out and waiting for the season to pick up next year, hopefully.
Okay.
And someone will need my services.
Okay. Well, I wish you the best. So thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll catch up with you. We won't wait 20 years to catch up with you for the next time.
Well, I hope not.
Thanks again, sir. Wow. Yeah. As soon as I listen again, I'm still laughing.
Yeah, that line about... living in Colorado and not getting enough oxygen to his brain is basically up for line of the year, I think, on the podcast. So far,
I sent John a text, I think, right after I finished talking to
him. Yes, you did. Yeah. And I was cracking up for sure.
I apologize for losing it on the interview, but wow.
Yeah, tough.
So, anything you have a urge to talk about?
Well, I have a Bobby Rose story now.
Oh,
you know, maybe the 30 years I was thinking about were mine, not yours.
Okay.
Back in 1989, when Bobby was coming up with the Angels, and you know, I went to Cal State Fullerton, and I lived in Southern California. A friend of mine was a mutual friend with a friend of Bobby's.
And you guys are about the same age.
Yes, we are.
I'm a little older than Bobby.
Yes, yeah, I'm a little bit older than
And Bobby. he's the guy who gave San Dimas High School a good reputation before Bill and Ted ruined it.
Well, we usually call it San Dimas, but yes. Yeah.
Oh, is it San Dimas? Okay.
Yes. Well, that's what we call it. I'm not saying it's right.
I don't know what it's called. I'm not a native.
Yeah. So my friend actually is Mark Stein, the guy who works at ESPN and now the New York Times and is a big NBA writer. And his friend was a friend of Bobby's. And we used to play pickup football on the weekends when I was in college. And actually some of the Stratomatic gang we had Stratomatic baseball gang. And we all used to get together and play football on weekends. And we decided to have a really big game. And the mutual friend of Bobby Rose's invited Bobby to play. And Bobby said yes.
Oh.
And so we all went to the field that day. And now my memory is beyond fuzzy. And I know that we started the game and he wasn't there. I don't remember if he ever showed up or not, but... The idea I had thinking in my head was, why would a guy who's just coming up in the big leagues come out and play pickup football game with a bunch of chumps and risk injury? And then I thought, because he's not afraid of getting hurt, because we can't even hurt the guy. That's, you know, and that's when I started to think these guys who are, you know, professional athletes don't see us mere mortals as any kind of threat or challenge, because that's why he was thinking about coming. Now, like I said, you know, I think he did show up. I can't remember because we won the game, so he didn't win, and maybe he didn't play. But it was just that's what I remember about Bobby Rose. And then when he came and played with the Bay Stars, I got in touch with him and ended up doing a story for the Orange County Register where I used to work.
Oh.
Because he was a former Angel, and so they wanted to do the story. So I got to do that, so that was cool. And I remember talking to him on the phone, and I don't know. He seemed really, really mellow in this interview. I remember a more lively guy. Maybe the kids are wearing him out, or maybe he was sleepy or something. He sounded really mellow on here.
Well, but, I think we'd been talking for a while. I think we...
Oh, you wore him out with your stories, huh?
Well, you said it, so I don't have to. Yeah, essentially, I beat him into the dirt. So, I waited until I tamed him. He was full of life before I got through with him.
You say tame, I say something else. But anyway,
except you wouldn't say it in polite company.
Right. My interest in the chat was, and I'm certain mine is the same as what Michael Westbay's was, would be, and that's on that 98 team that won and won the Japan Series. And, I thought the interview was headed that way when you started talking about, the infield and the guys, and he started to talk about that. But then you cut him off and asked a question about who's the most interesting guy, and he never got back to it. And I was kind of like, why? Wait a minute. Get back on the road. We were going someplace fun. But I did like his chat, and I like that he talked about the batting side and the failure. And I don't know. I think a lot of people might take that away from the interview, because these hitters fail so much more than the pitchers. But when we talk to pitchers and we talk to hitters, it seems like they both feel like they fail just as much. And it's not that, it's not that way. Like, the pitchers have so much more success.
Well, but,
I mean, when you look at the numbers, just the, the 70 to 30, if the batters reach 30, or if, I don't know what you call non-success, is
right. Maybe that's the thing. Look
at it in a different way. Exactly.
That's the thing, is the measure of success. He said something like, well, if you fail in your job 7 out of 10 times, I says, okay, well, what's a failure? What, like a typo when I'm doing a story that somebody fixes? okay. In which case I'm failing 9 out of 10 times, So, I mean, it depends. And again, a certain amount of failure is a normal part of everything, as you like to remind us.
Me?
Yeah. I mean, you talk about, when we talk about players growing up and learning how to fail, as you did last year.
Certainly, yeah.
So, it is normal. I mean, I was kind of interested in that, but I thought, what got me about that quote or that comment, he says, if your philosophy as a hitter doesn't change, you're going to fail. And then he threw in this little thing, and fail quite a bit.
Right.
And that really, that little emphasis on there, it's like, you're not just going to have a bad day. You're going to wish you had it to do over all over again, because you're going to be out of here.
Yeah. And it took me back to thinking, okay, way back, Ted Williams, we know, the last guy to hit 400 in the major leagues. And I thought, way back in that era, if you were hitting 300, you were a loser. A lot of guys were hitting 400. And now we're talking about, if a guy hits, let's say a guy is a 280, 290 hitter, that's considered really strong hitting. And anything over 300 is fantastic. And each day, you go home with a lot of failure, just like he said, and you have to learn to deal with that. And I remember you talking about, I can't remember who it was, the player you were mentioning, and you were saying that they just couldn't handle the failure. And that was one of the parts of being, that they'd rather be a pitcher instead of a hitter because of dealing with the failure as a hitter. But I love what Bobby Rose said. He said, look, they don't write about you hitting the home run a lot. And then you told him, yeah, but you hit a lot of home runs. And he said, yeah, but they didn't write about him.
Well, relatively, it's oddly when I look at his batting lines, because he was a power hitting second baseman, he was like a 20 home run guy, but he was really, really, really valuable because of the whole package. The average, the average wasn't great. He just did everything. And he played some defense, and he had the whole package. So he had some years that were extremely valuable. 1998 wasn't one of them. In my memory, it was, but that's how memories work.
Right. If you're going to have success, or if you want to think about success, and you get your hit here and there, your hits here and there, that just has, I go back to what Alonzo Powell told us a long time ago, which was, you can go up to the plate and do everything right and still go back to the dugout in the statistical evaluation of your at bat, a failure. but right. You will have hit the ball hard. You have hit a line drive. You accomplished everything you wanted to accomplish. The ball just didn't fall in. Yep. And it's that kind of scale that you have to go. I mean, you can do that a lot. And people say, man, this guy never gets a hit when there's runners on base. And I'm like, well, you know what? No.
Exactly.
You just want somebody to hit line drives. You can't help where the defense is always going. You can't help. I mean, there's certain zones where you can't put the ball into play into the areas you sure would be vacated by the defense. But still, come on now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what we talked about. And I typically am curious to find out what bothers people. Because I kind of know all the things that bother John because I push those
buttons. I was going to say.
But so I'm always looking for other people, you know, the bug. Besides John and Warren Cromartie, so we love you, Warren.
Hey, Warren.
I was curious about that, and it occurred to me, you know, now that you said this, one of the things that bugs a lot of guys in Japan is the need for the coaches in relationship with the media and sometimes in relationship with the front office and in the relationship with other coaches and the other players to reward and praise the most meaningless success, the most meaningless superficial success, while ignoring the content. Even though they know it's there, you know, they see your approach. They see, you know, it's like 16 pitch at bat and you hit a line drive to the second baseman that nearly takes his glove off and you go 0 for 4. And they say, well, extra batting practice for you tomorrow.
Right. And then some guy hits a dying quill dunker into left field with runner on third.
And he's the Climax Series MVP, Takahito Ishii.
Yeah, but yeah, I think those things, I mean, you know, and I understand fans too. Hey, look, he didn't strike out and you're not going to throw any hits back. And, you know, there are a lot of cliches that go along with those hits, but certainly you got a guy who, especially in Bobby Alonso, that time, that era of guys who hit a lot of line drives and went back to the dugout because they got caught. So
sure. Well, I mean, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And I was shocked because to be honest, I was never a fan of Bobby's defense. I mean, he was always, ironically enough, and he said, I didn't know this before he mentioned it. And then I went back to Baseball Reference and I saw that he had played, before he made his MLB debut, he had played 28 of his, excuse me, before he made his MLB debut, he had played 13 games at second base in A-ball over 2 years.
Okay.
It wasn't one, but it was 13 over 2 years. And it was a few
years. That ain't much.
No, it was not a lot. But he came up as basically a utility guy, which is really hard to do. I mean, he basically played every infield position his first year with the Angels, about his first half season with the Angels. And then in 1992, he started the season as their regular second baseman. And he played, I think, about 40 games into the season. He had played 30 games, 28 of them at second base. And so he was on the road to a regular job until May 21st, when one of the team's buses crashed on the New Jersey Turnpike. And he was on the bus that crashed, and he was rehabbing the rest of that year. Okay, now, ironically, two of the players on that bus finished their careers in Japan. Bobby Rose, and I know you'll never get this because we rarely think of this guy as being a Kintetsu Buffalo or a California, at the time, California Angel, Alvin Davis.
Alvin Davis? Oh, right. My gosh.
So he split, he wasn't hurt enough that he missed a lot of playing time. He split his season, his 1992 season, between the Angels, and then he came to Japan in the summertime and finished with the Kintetsu Buffaloes. And then Bobby Rose joined the Bay Stars in 1993. So there's that story. So that wiped out his promising major league career, but it opened, you know, opened the other door for him.
Take that, Seattle Mariners. You think Alvin Davis finished up there in the kingdom? No.
Yeah, a couple of people. Patrick Newman, our beloved NPB tracker, and Maury Brown started these threads. Patrick Newman started a thread of all-stars, you know, the all-star team of guys you didn't know, of good players you didn't know played for that team.
Right.
And he started,
I thought it was the White Sox, right?
Yeah, he started with the White Sox, right? And so people, I would love to do it, but I'm really not that good at it in the majors anymore. Mm. And then Maury Brown started one with, okay, I'll start this thread off with Oakland Athletics great Joe DiMaggio.
No,
he was a hitting coach for them, and it didn't occur to me that it was a hitting coach, and I got to include coaches, but
that's not fair. I was going to say, yeah, I'm looking for players. Sorry.
Okay, well, I followed with Chunichi Dragons legend Don Newcomb.
Oh yeah, one of the first players, right?
Right,
yeah,
Larry Doby too. So that would have been a double. But anyway, so that started, and so the Alvin Davis goes in there into that category. You know, we don't think of the Kintetsu Buffaloes Hall of Famer Alvin Davis.
And it was funny though to know that Takahiro Saiki was the guy who was the funniest, because he seemed kind of quirky, but
yeah, he liked to ham it up for the media, oddly enough. But he was a guy, as I said with Bobby, he was one of these guys who I really loved in the minor leaguer. He was one of these guys like Ichiro Suzuki and a few others who just, like, you knew this guy could play because of his minor league numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They were so off the charts that it took pretty much clinical blindness to leave him in the farm team, which the Bay Stars did year after year after year. Usually it's a guy like Takeshi Yamasaki or Dave Okubo or Saeki, guys who don't really have a good defensive position,
mm-hmm.
but who can really hit like crazy. Anyway, speaking of the last two guys, those were the two guys I was thinking about who had a lot to say about, or I suppose they still do have a lot to say about, how badly they were treated in the minors.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, you were talking about that last week then.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm sorry. You were talking about that during the interview.
About that, and I mentioned some of the guys who tend to be truthful and bitter and honest tend to have a chip on their shoulder. I mean, not just about their minor league treatment. But Saeki, who's this wonderful, fun-loving guy, and a bunch of the guys I know who in that era who were like him, trapped in the minors, who said, you know, tough. You know, I got to get over it.
Right, exactly.
But those two basically said, no, I got, they messed with my career. And they're bitter about it. And they end up with these guys have tended to have other issues. Now, the last thing I wanted to touch on, you know, because we were talking about how he ended his time in Japan and tried to come back a couple 2 years later with the Lotte Marines. And when he ended his career, he said, we talked about this. Now he alluded to this, the burnout. Basically, he had four kids by the time he left. He had three kids when he came here. When he was 25, he had three kids.
Mm.
And when he left, he had four. And he and his wife, is like a 10-month grind in Japan. As much as they love Japan, it's just like, are we going to do this? He was making millions and millions of dollars a year. And they're thinking, like, how long does this have to go on? And so basically the story, as I recall, and because I'm an old guy, you shouldn't put a lot of money, you don't make any bar bets on this. It was, the basic strategy was, I'm going to ask for so much money that if you say yes, it'll be so much that I can't turn it down. But you'll never say yes, so I'm done.
Right.
Okay. It was like Hideo Nomo's retirement from the Kintetsu Buffaloes. He asked them for like a $10 million 3-year contract. And they said, you're crazy. And they said, okay, then I'm going to retire. Except, anyway, so he did that, but he came back after 2 years and after 2 years out of the game. And I think he did not make it till March. He might have quit maybe the 5th of March or something. It wasn't long into the preseason when he gave it up.
Lack of oxygen to the brain. I love it. I love it.
Isn't that really wonderful? I wish I could excuse all of my dumb mistakes on that, but I never lived in Colorado, so I'm kind of out of luck.
Hey, just walk up to the highest point you can near your apartment and blame it on that that whatever peak you are on, you know, peak Koenji.
Indeed. I was on the third floor and it was
I could do it.
Yeah, I'm typically on the second floor. The third floor was altitude sickness. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about 143 ways to leave your lover. And this is about NPB so far unwilling to divorce itself from the 143 game season. Still. Now, on Friday, on Friday, the elders and the executives had the league executives had their meeting with the J League executives and they're all trying to determine a starting point in terms of NPB and a resumption point for the J League Soccer League. And they pushed it back again, pushed the start date back again. Now, they seem to have not figured out a way to get out of April. They keep mentioning April and perhaps starting the season in May. I think that's a pipe dream. I couldn't imagine anything before June. And we just saw in China what happened. The Chinese Basketball League tried to start up again and had to stop. So it's just, you know, the contingency plans they're considering, I'm not sure that it's a reality. And I'm not sure a full schedule is anywhere in the cards for this year if they can get on the field at all. But
at least for the first time, they've made a decision. I mean, it was a decision not to decide, but it was a decision that wasn't based on we're going to start the season on such and such date and, you know, and coronavirus can just go hang.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't, they did do that. So they made it an indefinite delay.
Psychiatrists who were telling them that they were losing their off their gourds or something, and they said okay, you know, the Pacific League presidents met on Wednesday and they said somebody, I won't say it was the president, but one of the officials at the meeting said taking part in the online meeting, we've been doing it backwards. And these were like magic words. We've been doing it backwards. We've been setting a date on which we're going to start the season regardless. And then we've been counting backwards, deciding when we should, you know, start practice. Instead of saying, let's wait until it's safe to practice, and then start, you know, find a suitable date to start the season.
Sounds logical.
And Anthony Fauci, the head of the Center for Disease Control, said exactly the same thing today on the PBS NewsHour. Well, that would have been Friday. PBS NewsHour in an interview, which if you're not familiar with PBS NewsHour and you're away from the States, it's a great source of fairly objective news. And he said, it doesn't matter what you say. When you think it's going to be safe, it's irrelevant when you think it's going to be safe. It'll be
That's
safe
correct.
When it is safe.
And look, you know, we were given...
Coronavirus not you.
Yeah, we in Tokyo recently, we were given suggestions and guidelines about self-isolation, indoor social distancing, and it's not strict. And, you know, so far the explosion I expected maybe three and a half weeks ago it was delayed, but it's here now.
It's coming.
And people are still piling into trains. They're sitting shoulder to shoulder. They're bumping into each other. They're touching everything. Everybody's touching everything in the trains.
Mm.
You know, the electronic money is one thing that Japan is really advanced at. Mm-hmm. And I've been turning to that. Not trying to exchange money with clerks. I show them when I'm buying products. I just show them the barcode. I don't want them touching it. Almost. If they touch it, I bring it back to wherever it is, whether it's home or the office, and I wash it first, and then I open it. And
yeah,
I mean, you know, I'm trying to be really careful. I might be overly careful, but I don't think you can. You don't get a second chance with this thing sometimes. So, you know, I'm lucky we don't have to take our wallets out so much anymore in
Unfortunately,
Japan.
The cheap supermarket where I live only handles cash, and I'm almost. I want to go to the more
keep the change.
I want to go to the more expensive supermarket where the selection's not as good and the quality isn't as good, just because I can do everything without people touching my card.
Right. So, I mean, basically, all I'm trying to say is I don't see 143. I don't know when this is going to go away soon in Japan. And you talked about it in a blog post that you've been very prolific and very informative, and you talked about the impact of the WBC being scheduled for next year, and with the Olympics being, and I said last week on last week's show canceled, but I should have said postponed to 2021 next year. And so with that, you know, those two events supposed to be scheduled in the same year, I'm thinking the WBC should be pushed back to 2022.
You know how that's going to go. Japan's going to talk about, well, it's not anything, because you have, it's a tug of war between one group that doesn't care, one group that cares about the Olympics, and one group that doesn't care about the Olympics, and they're the ones who organize the WBC, which is in the union. So guess who's going to win? Japan's going to put up a brave front before they cave in, as Japan does. Eventually, Japan will probably minimize its Olympic break and play long after the normal season in order to satisfy playing in the WBC and prioritizing the Olympics. Because MLB is not going to say, oh, we should play in November then because of NPB, because that doesn't suit. You know, MLB is going to do what MLB wants, and they're going to tell NPB just to do what they're told.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And because basically, as one NPB executive says, whenever there's any kind of negotiation, NPB bends over and says, do what you want.
Yikes.
and I'm leaving out the best part of that quote, but I think.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, let's leave that out. Anyway, I just, you know, for me, I can see maybe something starting in August, maybe 3 months, 3.5 months, using all of October, part of November, and then just go straight to the Japan series and wrapping something up. But that's only if they get a chance to start in August. Otherwise, I just can't see a season. Yeah. And
I mean, even,
you know, the 100.
Right. Even on Friday, they were saying our goal is still to play 143 games. We can play 143 games somehow, and then we can throw the climax. They didn't talk about the climax series at all. It was like it was a stepchild. It's like, are you still here? We'll squeeze it. They said we'll squeeze in the Japan series.
Squeeze in. Yeah, the 143 is a pipe dream wrapped in a wish, looking for a four-leaf clover in the dark on a rainy night. I mean,
in other words, yeah.
Not likely.
No, probably not. I think they're going to need an alternative solution. I mean, the J League, the pro soccer in Japan, was actually considering maybe not planning any opening day at all and just waiting, and not even saying we're looking at May, they did in fact say we're going to wait at least a month, another month after April. So they're looking at the end of May also as a possible start, but they were going to say we're not even going to start, and that they talked themselves out of that. I guess they didn't want to make NPB look bad.
Okay. Look, all right. Wishful thinkers. All right. So making a two-seam transition now, I want to talk about Masataka Nashida, the former Kintetsu Buffaloes and Nippon Ham Fighters and Rakuten Eagles skipper, who was this past week diagnosed or tested positive for coronavirus. And so it was on Wednesday, and it was April Fool's Day. And normally that that would be a ballpark day for me. I would have gone to a baseball park and tried to get an interview with the player and blah, blah, blah. So no baseball. I was self-isolating. That day, the twins were at nursery school. Wifey was at work. It was a late afternoon, and I saw a breaking news flash on TV, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. And I opened up my phone and went to tweet it, and there you were, having tweeted it already. So I guess I retweeted your tweet, and I'm sure they're still trying to track Nashida's contact with players and coaches and other staff members of other MPB-related individuals, as well as folks in his personal life. He's 66. I'd put him in the high-risk category, but I heard today there was a man in the States, 104, who was infected with coronavirus and recovered. So it's not a death sentence. I'm sure it's a difficult fight, but they put Nashida in ICU in an Osaka hospital, and we can send thoughts and prayers and hope he gets well. And it's kind of a shock, but as I said last week, I expected to hear more.
Well, which is a bad sign probably, because he was diagnosed with pneumonia before he entered the hospital and before he tested positive for the coronavirus. So he's one of my favorite people in Japanese baseball. And I talked a little bit about it on the website, but on Twitter as well. But I'll tell you this story and I'll leave it at that. The Pacific League managers typically have a media scrum before the game. Usually lasts five or 10 minutes. And Alex Ramirez does also with the Bay Stars, but it's not universal. Anyway, the PL managers have been doing it for a long time, and Nashida would do it. And I didn't know, you know, I'm not going to every game. I'd show up at a game, you know, a Buffalo's game now and then when they're in Tokyo. And he had this habit whenever he was, and he'd be looking at me, and he could see when I wasn't paying attention.
Which was probably most of the time, right? What'd he say? What'd that mean? Huh? What am I eating for dinner?
Yeah,
huh?
Well, I pay attention to him. As you know, I pay attention to all the people that are important to me. What'd you say, John? Oh, sorry.
John? Exactly. I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
You're tipping your pitches now.
No, I got to stop that. The Astros will get to me. Anyway, so he'd look at he had it, because about three times a year, he'd snap a question at me and said, "Isn't that the way they do it in the States?" And I'd be going, "Oh, yeah, I don't know. It's been a long time since I've been in the States," and I'd be nodding my head, and he'd be looking there, he'd be giving me like a little snicker, almost he couldn't, like there was a giggle of trying to get out. He was trying to keep a straight face while he had me in extreme discomfort. But I just love the guy, and there are so many people who think so highly of this guy as an individual, so we all wish him well.
Definitely. He's a very classy guy, very easy to approach. I haven't really done a lot of work one-on-one with him. I did join some of those scrums when he was with the Fighters and the Eagles, and just a very approachable guy. So do wish him the best. And you know, we've got the ever useless thoughts and prayers, but I mean what else can we do?
Anything. I hope they are in his case.
Certainly. All right. One note, other than the fact that MPB has stopped the farm games, they actually stopped those farm games that were going on. So the first team practice games and all those things were stopped early on, but the farm games were going on. So they stopped all that. I think a number of the major league Japanese guys in the major leagues have come back to Japan. Masahiro Tanaka, Shun Yamaguchi, being some of the top name guys who have come back, but
goes back as well.
Yeah,
as far as I know. Yeah. But Tanaka came. It was weird. Tanaka came back without telling people, and then
he kind of snuck back.
Yeah, I wondered because one of the beat writer, the Yankees beat writer for the Athletic, asked me about it, and she said Lindsay Adler said that the pitching coach sort of spilled the beans on that without intending to.
Oops.
Yep, exactly. And so he said on the 2nd of April, he said, "I came back at the end of March as was reported." And I don't know maybe the Athletic reported that. I don't know. But it was almost like the Japanese media didn't report it. So I think there was an understanding with the Japanese media that they weren't supposed to talk about it.
Possibly. And I know that Shohei Ohtani is allowed to work out at the Angels facility because he's coming off an injury, so he hasn't come back. And I know that Yu Darvish, who spoke about some of the situations that are going on in the States, is still over there. And the thing that was really hurtful and worrisome for me was that our leadership in the United States coined this virus, the Chinese virus. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans are not very good at discerning any Asian people from each other. So they can't tell who's Korean and who's Chinese and who's Japanese.
If it's okay to pick on Chinese, ethnic Chinese, because the coronavirus first outbreak was in Wuhan, China, you know?
Right. As reported now, I think this is all said and done, they might go back and find that it was in a lot of places, and there are a lot of strains of coronavirus. But anyway, my point being that this situation with some of the guys coming home, it was a situation that I thought about because my kids are in the Asian community, right? Mm-hmm. So it was, someone said to me the other day, it was a cousin of mine. She said, you should come back. You should be thinking about coming back. I said, with my little Asian looking children, I don't think so, and she hadn't heard of these things about Chinese people. I've been seeing so many things on Facebook with people saying, them saying, stay away from me. Your country started this virus and these people not even being Chinese, they're just Asian.
I did a follow-up on the Tanaka one and a couple of people, and one of the people on Twitter who made a he was just trying to be funny, I believe. And he said, well, nobody's ever heard of Tanaka's wife, who's supposed to be a superstar, but nobody's heard of her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, saying she was a superstar is exaggeration. She was a pop singer for a marginally popular group. But
Right. The
whole thing is, there's no reason, I guess trying to make a joke and saying there's no, but it came off as being jaded or callous about discrimination that Asians feel in America because of this. And it really, it got to me, and I'm thinking, it really annoyed me. I'm saying, you don't know. You're not going through it, so you don't know. You can't say what they perceive as a threat.
Right. And I always tell people, I say, look, I experienced racism in the States and I experienced it here in Japan, but it's much friendlier here because these people are not armed and they don't attack.
Yeah.
So it's very mild, in my opinion. I'm used to it. I've seen it before.
Yeah.
But I think it's a totally different situation in the States. And if these players feel threatened at all, I think they should definitely come back home and throw this virus.
I mean, if you're Masahiro Tanaka and you're with your wife and kid, your wife and child in Florida, and you're reading about people, Asians in Florida, being people shouting at them or spitting at them or, ignoring, doing something, some sort of incidents, kind of a mild harassment even, it's like, why do I need to put my child and wife through that when it's not necessary? And also be in a country with a third world, national health system.
That's another problem. So hopefully even if they get better, the people start behaving better, not worse. Yeah. And so as long as there's food, I think there's no problem. As soon as the food starts to run out, we've got problems. But let's move along. Let's go to fielding questions. Okay, the first one came to us via Twitter from Gabe in Toronto, and he said, I was just going to ask a high heat question about where the logical places for MPB to expand would be, and where would you expand if you were in charge?
Well, John, where would you expand if you were in charge?
Well, I would expand by canceling out your Twitter account, because you duped me on April Fool's Day with your tweet and accompanying blog post, you chump.
I think I fooled everybody because it occurred to me on the second. I apologize.
Yes, you did it on the American date, so I don't like you. So anyway, the answer to the
I'm going to cry now.
Okay, well, don't let any of those tears get on the computer and mess up your taping, your recording session here. keep the computer dry. Cry all you want. I would like to take the second question first. I would not like to expand in this environment, but if I were in charge, I'd go to maybe the indie leagues, and I'd try to match them up with some of the MPB teams that don't have a third tier.
Mm-hmm.
And have them partner to ensure that each team has three levels. That's the first thing I would do.
Okay.
And because you don't want to have teams like, you know, we've got big money teams plus the Hiroshima Carp who have three levels of. they want to be a big money team.
Well, they got big income. You know, okay. They've got big income and low overhead. So they're spending away.
Okay. Well, you know, like I said, I would do my best to make that happen because I want a strong foundation because, you know, you build from the bottom up. You need to reinforce that foundation. Mm-hmm. And then I think that development starts from there, that side of the game. And then I think, you know, because if you could get the unevenness out of that tier situation that we have going on in Japan, then you can start to build from there. I think I heard, I was poisoned by Jim's blog post in which he named some cities, but I could see this. I think I said this before, because we get a question like this, it seems like every 3 to 4 years. And each time we answer it, I think the situation and the circumstances have changed, so they're relevant. But I could see Naha and Miyazaki maybe in the Central League to add two teams there. So four in the two in the Central League.
Why? I like that. Because right now,
yeah, and then
things just get on the train and say you Pacific League.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of travel. And then Niigata and Nagano or Shizuoka for a couple of Pacific League teams. Mm. I don't know which one is better, Niigata or Nagano, but definitely in Shizuoka, I think. So, and those are the cities. But, you know, I think when you're talking about making, you know, expanding, we really want to help player development. But I think you've got, with all the corporate teams and with all the indie teams and with the college teams, I think there's enough talent that we could spread it over four more teams. I just don't know when they would be good. I don't think, yeah. I think it would take them a long time to get good.
Yeah, I think the premise of my article, I was so fed up with what MLB is doing, and already I can see what they're going to do next year, which is say, sorry guys, we're all poor, we're poor billionaires mm-hmm. because of the coronavirus, so we're not going to offer anybody any good contracts because we're poor, so suck it up.
And you guys suck it up. We're not.
Exactly. It's not our job to do that. So they're limiting the draft, and they're deferring signing bonuses for the drafted mm-hmm. players. And the some of my colleagues on another podcast said, they're throwing amateur players under the bus again. These amateur players have been run over so many times, they can't even say throw them under the bus. They're saying, like, throw them under the shin cups. They go on the bus. Oh, cool. It's only a bus. Well, we thought you were going to really, really stick it to us. So
yeah, they're pretty much balls of grease in the street now.
Pretty much, they're aspiring. You know, MLB's aspiring to push them out of the gutter. So I was thinking, you know, why don't they go? You know, of course, I think this is real. I mean, to me, this is a golden opportunity for Japan to basically. And that was the reason for the expansion, is like, it's a great time to expand, actually, because again, there's going to be all this available talent from America if they can handle it. And that's the question that John answered with his answer. He, you know, he proposed a way of handling the talent. Right now, there's probably about There's probably about three teams that could manage. Well, if they tried, there's probably about six teams that can manage it. Right now, one team has the infrastructure. Two more are building it. But I would like to see all the Japanese teams signing all these, the top amateur players in America. And say, okay, we're going to do away with the foreign limit, but we're going to expand. Now, they could do a slow expansion. You know, they could give
sure
a couple of years, like they're doing in Taiwan. I mean, they've got an expansion next season, and the team that's going to be the fifth team in the Chinese Professional Baseball League is playing in the minors this year. So there could be a way of doing it, but that was my thinking behind the April Fools. And so I decided, okay, what if MLB actually had, what if NPB actually had some bravery, you know, an ounce of courage, an ounce of intestinal fortitude, you know, what might happen. And I did have one of our friends of the podcast, Dave DeFreitas, called and says, a bunch of scouts were asking if that was real, because we were all psyched. So no, it was not real. It was, you know, and I think if we had Mr. Atsushi Saito, the commissioner of NPB, answer that, he would say, are you kidding? We don't have, you know, our business requires us to have a complete and total lack of moral courage. So never happened.
Hashtag.
Yeah, never. I like that idea of bringing in more foreign players, maybe not getting rid of the limits on import players, but possibly just opening it up to, you know, no more than half the team or something like that. But
yeah, but
certainly.
Yeah. Getting rid of the four players. And then because the reason for that and my thinking on this is, why make NPB's job a purpose in life to be a jobs program for Japanese? And why not make it the best, you know, why make it a welfare system when it could conceivably be the best, the elite baseball league in the world? There's no reason why it couldn't be, for a number of reasons, which I've talked about it ad nauseum, and some of you have been sickened by some of the stuff I've written undoubtedly, the Japanese people love baseball a huge amount. There's two, you know, they say there are four seasons in Japan. They're wrong. They're lying to you. There are two seasons. There's baseball season and there's off season.
Yeah, sounds like the United States, except when they're talking about NFL and football season.
Yeah, States. That's right. There's baseball season, and then there's the 3 months until baseball season.
Yeah, in the States, there's one season. It's football, and that's the time when they're having games, and the time when they're not.
Yeah, that's the way it is in Japan. I mean, there's no reason why Japan can't have, you know, the best Dominican and Cuban talent and the best American amateur talent wanting to come to play in Japan.
Right.
Except Japan selling itself short and thinking they could never do it.
Yep. In terms of the cities, getting back to the question of the cities, the reason I picked those cities is because I wanted a place that I wanted places that already have infrastructure, already have a stadium, a decent population, decent markets. But I seriously believe they would all struggle to support teams over the long haul if they were not successful, maybe with the exception of Naha, because I think with camps being down there every year, I think that area would support a team, or at least have support of, you know, be able to support any team that comes down there as a visiting team. And draw enough in terms of the stadium to get to keep.
Yeah, I'd say Miyazaki is kind of hard because it's very rural. I mean, Miyazaki City is a lovely city, but it's a small city surrounded by smaller towns, and so that's hard. Kagoshima might be better because it's actually on the Shinkansen line or Kumamoto, but although Kumamoto's ballpark isn't, you know, both of those cities don't have really nice ballparks, unlike Miyazaki. Whereas, having said that, Okayama's got a lovely ballpark, and Niigata's got a lovely ballpark, and Shizuoka's got a serviceable ballpark that could be upgraded. And I think Nagoya, in a metropolitan area that large, one team.
Yeah, I thought, you know, as your blog post said, yeah, another team in Nagoya. And I thought about the Gifu area, the Nagaragawa Stadium out that way. And that was a possibility. And it's probably true that that area could probably support a team, but it's such a tough pull to drag those fans away from the Dragons. Drag away from the Dragons.
It is. But it's going to be that way always. And eventually, and it takes 10 years, you know, it really takes 10 to 20 years for a team to establish itself. There's no easy way. It ain't going to happen. The Fighters and the Hawks have done remarkable work. Now they're well established. You know, they were probably both well established about 15 years into their tenure. But even 13 years after the Hawks moved to Fukuoka, they were still giving away the TV rights for about $1,000 a game. Just so they could be on TV throughout Kyushu. And they were giving tickets away to junior high school and high school kids so they can fill up the stadium.
And build the fan base with the guys, who don't have that that deep emotional attachment and devotion over decades to a team. Yeah.
That was a Japan Series championship team, you know, 13 years into their existence, and they've been a lousy team. But now... Now they can charge, you know. Now they can charge whatever they like. Everybody should have got to have them on TV.
Okay, and before we go, there's one more question that we got via email this past week. This is from Sean in Baltimore, and he said, "I just started listening to JBW, but now I'm a subscriber, and I hope that you keep up the podcasting during the extended off season. I think you guys should consider doing a series on the history of each NPB franchise. It would set you up for 12 weeks of shows." Yes, it would. "My introduction to Japanese baseball came in a college class on the history of the samurai. It says, I'm a Baltimore Orioles fan, 54 and 108 in 2019, and I've been learning more about NPB as a sort of escape. I'm a Tigers fan because my now wife got me a jersey from a friend in Osaka when we started dating. The Tigers championship drought nearly mirrors the Orioles, so it seems like a good fit. I'd like to learn more about the history of the Tigers outside of the basics of the Japan Series drought and the curse of the Colonel. Maybe you guys could have a guest like T-Ray on the show to go into depth about the history of the team. Hope to hear more from you guys soon. Regards, Sean." So, Sean, I thank you very much for the idea. The 12 weeks of shows.
I love it.
We're probably going to need them.
Yeah, we're looking at now, right now. You know, NPB's thinking of the end of May. I think we're thinking of maybe like March.
I don't know. That takes an awful lot of preparation. Usually just to do the games for me, I just watch games and then I take notes and then we talk about them. But if I actually had to do prep, as you know, probably that you've heard, I have they're 3.5 years old now. I have twins.
Yeah,
it's going to be daddy daycare starting on Monday. But yeah, that would require a lot of preparation and a lot of work. We will see. Let's just put it that way. Okay. We can definitely, if you could narrow it down, 12 weeks of preparation like that would probably, I wouldn't get any sleep. Not if I want to keep up my working out. But we'll see what we can do in terms of providing some more history on some of the teams.
Gibson.
Yeah, well, you can't sacrifice everything until you're gone. That's the ultimate sacrifice, and that don't make no sense.
Okay.
But, and the Tigers. You went from Baltimore Orioles to the Tigers. Good luck with that. And yeah, hopefully we can have T. Ray back on the show. He was excellent in the Central League prediction special. He did really good work, and I liked talking to him, and he's got a lot of personality, a lot of energy, and really appreciated that. So anyone else who has a question, please send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Also, you can leave us a note on the Facebook page. Send us an MP3, you guys. Yeah, talk please. It to your smartphone. Send that memo, and we'll play that as your question. Just keep it to a minute. And, we will be back next week. I have talked to a couple of players, and they have given me the okay to give them a call. So I'm doing my part. Jim is trying to line up some interviews as well. So we'll keep it going as long as we can. And we will consider doing maybe wrap everything up in one historical.
Yeah, we should be able to.
I can't say 12 weeks of doing that preparation.
They've only been playing pro baseball in Japan since about 1923. So we'll be fine.
Almost 100 years of history. Yeah.
Well, the first 13 is not a long one. It's only just one team. So
there you go. There, we're halfway done. All right.
Yeah. All right. We've just covered 13 of 100 years. Okay, John, you get the other 87.
All right. Self-isolation, social distancing, hand washing, face washing, clothes washing, sanitation. Do it all, guys. Stay safe, and we will talk to you next time. Enjoy your whatever this is.
And see you all safe and healthy.